Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
And lo, the Lord looked down, and the Lord said, "Hey, you know what? That Crispin Glover guy is pretty good, and also that Dominic Jackson lady is pretty good, but you know what would be great? Little Danny Trejo up in here."
Oh, yeah.
And the Lord said, "Yeah, that would be
Let there
real
be
good.
Danny Trejo.
Let there be Danny Trejo." And there was Danny Trejo on the latest episode of American Gods, Conscience of the King. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And as usual, spoiler warning here, we're not going to talk about every single thing that happened in this week's episode of American Gods. We're going to talk about the highlights. 90% of it, I think, is going to be about Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. But
well, here, let me kick off the full Ice Cube Trejo of the episode here. When do you think he signed the contract to appear in the show? While he was sitting there? And then the cameras were like, "All right, now you're Mr. World."
I'll take it one step further. I think he was there anyway. They're like, "Oh, all right, just start rolling. Let's see what happens."
Yeah, maybe they ordered his tacos for craft service, and they're like, "Hey, while you're in here, do you mind just, you know, jumping in?"
He delivers them personally.
And for those of you who don't know, Danny Trejo runs, like, a pretty sick taco spot out in L.A. That's what Pete's referencing. I've eaten there.
Yeah, I wonder, so broad strokes about the episode, then we'll get back to mostly talking about Danny Trejo. A bunch of stuff, as usual, going on here with Mr. Wednesday, which seems to be the main thrust of the plot. He's trying to woo Demeter. He's trying to get her back. We've been certainly speculating about whether it's romance-based or whether it's monetarily based / New Gods, Old God War based. Turns out it's a little bit of all of that, actually, by the end of the episode, as Demeter dissolves into a bunch of leaves and birds. His brother Tyr comes back. We get a lot of their backstory from the Revolutionary War about what went on with the three of them, and some emotional truths come to light. Meanwhile, Shadow Moon has that long-awaited conversation with Laura. Doesn't last very long, surprisingly.
Yeah.
And then Shadow goes off on a bunch of other adventures. Mm-hmm. He meets an old friend in Sam Blackcrow, who shows up, turns out to be the sister of the landlord. He continues his romance with the landlord, dances to a little Poison halfway through the episode.
Poison.
Did not see that coming.
Sort of feel like, just to stop myself here in the middle of this recap, this was probably Pete's favorite episode, right? There were cars. There was Danny Trejo.
There wasn't enough cars to make it.
Wow. I mean, this episode was truly dedicated to all the Pete LePages out there. Like, you had to like this episode.
Oh,
you
got, I loved it.
You got a moon family rejection. You got Shadow Moon being in, like, a late 90s Hanes commercial, essentially, in the middle of that episode. This is a Pete episode.
Absolutely.
It was. So, I mean, but my favorite so far has been the episode that was mainly about the car. So, you know, it's a hard act to follow.
Yes, absolutely. We all 100% agree with that.
Everyone.
Meanwhile, Laura goes off into her own storyline. She's still gunning straight for Wednesday, teaming up with Salim. By the end of the episode, Mr. Trejo recruits her, probably to deliver tacos, but not 100% sure. I guess we can speculate about that. And I feel like there was a third storyline that I'm probably missing, but that's kind of the main things that are going on. Oh, yeah, I guess all the stuff in Lakeside is still going on. Allison is still missing. The town is spiraling out of control. Hinzelman kind of gets them back in control by the end of the episode, much to the sheriff's chagrin. But there is stuff going on there, and certainly hints about what's going to happen going forward. So that all said, do we want to chat about the technical boy thing? Right. Because technical boy is dealing with the fact that he's feeling emotions for the first time. Love, what is this thing?
What are emotions?
Yes. He needs to find something called Artifact One that is going to help him analyze these human emotions he's feeling for the first or probably second time. Mr. World knows exactly where they are. And a big revelation here seems like Mr. World is working for somebody else. He calls his boss in this episode.
Yeah.
So what's going on there? What's happening? Lots to digest. But let's start with Mr. Trejo slash World.
Okay. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, if it's Danny Trejo, he's probably on the phone with the giant taco, you know, who's like calling all the shots.
The thing, I mean, obviously the cat, let's that settle.
I love the fact, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Justin. I love the idea that in Pete's mind, who runs a taco place? A giant taco.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It's a Burger King. There's a Ronald McDonald who's a clown made of cheese.
It's like one of those pigs outside a barbecue place that's eating its own stomach very happily. Same sort of deal.
There are two ways to talk about Danny Trejo jumping in here as Mr. World. One, all the weird casting shit that's happened on this show where they're like, all right, cycle
through.
They're
leaning into it.
Call the next person. Hey, A-list agent. Who else you got sitting around?
The weirdest part to me, and we talked about this a little bit with Dominique Jackson to Crispin Glover, but it's even more prominent here bringing Danny Trejo. There doesn't feel like there's any thought put to having a continuity of performance. It's just these actors coming in, doing their thing, doing it well.
Yeah.
But we had two seasons of Crispin Glover, who is so weird. The fact that Dominique Jackson came in and did something completely different, and Danny Trejo, to your point, Justin, just comes in and sits down on set and does his Danny Trejo thing, which is great.
Yeah, always fun to see him.
But it doesn't feel like Crispin Glover. It doesn't feel like Dominique Jackson. It is very hard to hold on to what this character is at this point.
Well, let me throw out the way I was rationalizing it. For the seasons leading up to this, you have Crispin Glover, who's sort of the sit back, like, I'm strategic. I'm have this all under control. Then this season, you flip over to Ms. World, and she's like, all right, let's fucking do this. Much more aggressive. And that comes through in the performance because the situation, the war's getting more dire. They need to act a little faster and harder. And then in this episode, we switch to Danny Trejo, who the second Mr. World, who's like, you know, he's going to go fight someone.
Yeah,
like,
he's going to get it done. If you're, you know, ramping up, the next level is Danny Trejo level, which means it's fucking go time.
And I don't know if I'm doing their work for them by putting that together, but because I do think they should nod to it a little bit more. Like, I think we should, if we're going to cast Danny Trejo, put him in, like, get him ready to fight. If that's the idea here, that we're getting closer to the fight, then he should be, his wardrobe should reflect that. Or he should have, battle armaments going on or something like that.
Well, I think we'll get there. First, you know, the transformation into the Trejo just means it's really close to go time. And then he'll hopefully will suit up. Either heighten into somebody who's more crazy than Danny Trejo, which I can't imagine.
Who's that?
Yeah, I don't know. But then
John Cena?
Yeah, that would be something along that guy, like The Rock or something.
A fully oiled Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. I did think about Arnold, but then I was like, I don't know if that's a step up from the Trejo. I feel like they're kind of similar levels.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you're basing this, when you're saying levels, you're talking about the hot sauce levels at Danny Trejo's taco restaurant, right?
Oh, yeah, of course I am.
Bottom level is Crispin Glover. Right after that, it's Dominique Jackson. Then you're at Danny Trejo level, which is about even to oiled Schwarzenegger.
Exactly.
And honestly, anyone who walks in that restaurant knows exactly what those hot sauces mean. Yeah. Huge American God fan base at Trejo's restaurant.
But I mean, I got to say, though, it has been fun. Like it. I mean, obviously, Crispin Glover is amazing. I love what Jackson brought to it. But then also turning into Trejo, I was like, oh, shit, this is crazy. I thought it was such a fun choice of like, we're leveling up. No more of this putting up with people. It's like time to get out of
machete. I would personally be much more on board with what you guys were saying if it felt like the new gods were doing anything this season. And maybe that's what we're getting towards. Certainly there's hints that they're working on this shard thing in this episode. I don't remember if we've heard about it before, though it sounded familiar. I assume it's like their global social network, all computers type thing. But so far this season, it's definitely felt like they're sitting on the sidelines. They're doing the 80s animated cartoon thing of sitting there going, soon, gadget, soon. And that's pretty much it. Wow. They haven't made any moves.
Wow. I have heard a lot of shitty impressions from you, but that really just took me right back. It was really well done.
It's a shame that's not complimenting you.
I fucking hate it.
Yes.
But that was really good.
It's a shame that's not a more useful impression, Alex. It's really hard to find a good spot for that.
It mostly only comes up on job interviews. Yeah.
Soon, I will work here at this corporation.
Last question before we let you go. Do you have a passable Dr. Claw?
People are like, ugh, no. All right, Elon Musk, I do. That's the only person who would ever ask for that, by the way.
The technical boy thing also feels like, I don't know. I love him. I think he's great, but I'm not 100% sure how he is fitting into the season at this point. And this whole artifact thing feels like, I don't know. It's a new piece of information that I'm not sure we necessarily need. I know I'm sounding very down on this. I like the individual elements, but I'm not 100% sure what it's amounting to as of yet. And then throwing in the fact that Mr. World is working for somebody is another thing that feels like it knocks him down a notch.
Honestly, you sound like Penny, who when Inspector Gadget does something stupid, and she's disappointed in him.
Oh. I do have a dog that helps me out in most things.
Not true.
I thought you were going to talk about your... Anyways. All right, so I think that...
my daughter named Penny?
Yes, exactly, who you named after the cartoon, which I think is really impressive.
That's definitely not true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you named her after the currency and your son, Nickel.
No, he named...
We did briefly consider naming her Penny Nicole because we thought that would be pretty funny, but we decided don't give a child a funny name.
Yeah. Good. That's the first step in parenting, is to not ruin your child's life with a joke name.
I thought it was because you have a giant penny in your lair in your basement.
Mm. Thank you for calling me Batman. Who do you think Mr. World works for?
Who does number two work for?
Don't. I knew you were going to do it when I said it like that.
Yeah, Alex, your impressions are slipping out of control.
You're like technical boy.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. You're the technical boy for sort of mediocre impressions.
Dad jokes, yeah.
This is a weird idea, but what if he works for Mr. Wednesday?
That was where my mind certainly went.
Wow.
Which changes the show dramatically if that's where they're going, but that certainly seems to be probably there's nobody else. Like, he's not working for Mr. Universe or something like that.
Now that would be awesome. A oiled up dude who's maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, oh my god, didn't he actually win Mr. Universe?
Yes,
he did. It's all working out.
So I think that it's just one of those things where when it comes to the artifact thing and technical boy, because he got his powers maybe from a steampunk robot, that this artifact is going to be a little bit more of his origin of like how he actually got these technical powers.
Oh, like a Rock'em Sock'em robot.
Yeah. Yeah.
The original technology.
Oh, let's move over and talk about Laura, because...
Why?
Again... She's great. Shut up, Pete.
I was
surprised how short this conversation was with Laura and Shadow, personally.
Well, they I put was to happy. Rest any happy. Of the any of the Shalora shippers are down and out after this because Shadow is not interested.
Why would he be?
I've never seen someone put down the X in front of the new girlfriend as hard as this happened in this
You got
scene.
A lot. A new girl know, like, hey, listen, none of my bullshit is going to interfere with this. I'm not even interested in this lady. We're still good. I thought he handled it very well.
I did love the exchange in front of Marguerite. I think I got this right, where he called Laura his late wife, and then she corrected him as ex-wife.
That was very funny. I like this scene, and I think Laura looked amazing coming through this scene and coming out of it. She's like, okay, dude, I'm just trying to get my revenge thing. I've moved on to a box of ashes that used to be a leprechaun, so I don't need this shit.
Well, no, I thought it was a short conversation because she's like, hey, I want to kill your father. And he's like, no, you can't. It's my father. And she's like, okay, fine. And was like, I'll come up with a different way to do it.
Well, but I do think we got some when we first saw the scene, there were some flickers of Laura and how they all got here. Like, I think we were seeing their relationship and sort of testing if there are any feelings left. And it felt like the answer was solidly no on both sides.
Yeah, which was great.
But I think the sort of other side of this scene was the scene when Laura gets back to the hotel room with Salim. Salim's being talked to by his TV. Weird. And
which
he's
she
like,
doesn't believe at all. Like all the crazy shit that's happened to her. She's dead, come back. She was in some kind of limbo lobby area. But oh, Salim says, hey, the TV's talking to me. And she's like, no, you're out of your mind. Like, what the fuck, Laura?
Yes, weird oversight, but I think the point of it was she's like, you have to move on from the djinn and just find a new love in your life, find a new life. And he's like, sure. And then the box of ashes almost falls off the desk and she holds it. So she's still, clearly the idea here is that her feelings are for Mad Sweeney and she's going to do whatever she can to get him back.
Well, it's just don't take advice from Laura.
Just okay. Don't. The main thing that I took away from it, my main reaction, I agree with you, Justin. I think your take is absolutely right. But I also thought it was kind of funny that she's like, I can't let go of this box of leprechaun ashes, which granted,
same. It's got a gold coin in it.
If I had a box of leprechaun ashes, I'd take it with me everywhere and I'd show it to everybody.
100%. It makes Guinness taste amazing.
Oh, my God.
Sprinkle of leprechaun.
Put a little sprinkle of that on chicken. That's good stuff.
Good.
No,
very
that's
good.
Awful. You guys are cannibals.
Eh.
Is it count to be a cannibal if you eat a leprechaun?
Yes.
I don't think so. Yeah. They're not the same species.
They're not the same species.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
They're mostly made of what? Candy and gold coins?
I believe of rainbows.
I think so.
You can eat a rainbow. It was like that old song from the 60s. You can eat a rainbow.
What are you singing?
Oh, okay. That was it.
It's a short. Back then, it was a short. Very short song.
More of a campfire. Back in those days, they hadn't invented more than one line for a song.
Well, records are much shorter than your compact discs.
All right. Are we ready to record? And we're done.
Print it.
What else should we talk about? Since we mentioned Shadow, why don't we talk about the rest of his stuff? Because I thought Shadow was great in this episode. In fact, when we got to the poison dancing scene, and we've been kind of getting here anyway, Ricky Whittle needs to be in a rom-com. Like, this guy has been on The 100. It was apparently treated very poorly there. Clearly, American Gods has been fraught the entire time. Just, like, put him in a Netflix rom-com movie. That's where he needs to be because he is so charming and so funny, and it's so great when he smiles, and that came through that scene. Great. Yeah. We don't get to see that enough on this show for obvious reasons, but it's a delightful when it does happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. He was this whole thing in an episode that was about like how romance is so arch and constructed for a lot of these characters. And then you cut into this scene where he's painting his apartment for no reason. He's renting it. He doesn't need to paint it.
Yeah.
He's there on assignment. There's no reason for him to be like, I'm going to settle down and I need this wall to be maroon or whatever. He's pink. Got poison turned way up.
It's not pink. It is salmon.
Actually. Salmon mist is what salmon it officially mist, was.
Yeah, which sounds gross.
Yeah.
Like, think about how you got that salmon mist. That's an exploded salmon right there.
No. Yeah. I mean, you live on a lake. You're going to paint with fish. That was a song from the 50s.
I got to say, though.
Hold on. Let me finish.
Boom, boom, boom. Live on a lake. Gotta paint with fish. And that's a wrap.
We got it. We're halfway to an album. he's there. He's painting in his underwear. Music turned way up. His girlfriend, sort of, is his landlord. Like, he's asking for it. He's asking for her to come in there and catch him.
100%. And she did. It worked perfectly. She thought it was adorable. It was great. But what I want to talk about was how sick that boombox was. Did you see the size of that thing? It was glorious. I mean, come on. That thing had to take like 40D batteries. Oh, man. I wish he would have put it up over his shoulder. It was ginormous.
Hey, Pete,
I loved
you know what else takes
of
40Ds? You know what? You know, I don't know what else takes 40Ds?
Don't be gross.
Oh, Pete, another boombox.
You never fail to talk about something that has nothing to do with the story of the show. It's amazing. So, and I will say that, though, sometimes you do chance upon something that does matter. One out of every 50. So we have to listen to all of them.
Well, for example, you didn't mention this here, Pete, but I think the important detail that gets brought up by Marguerite, the landlord, is the fact that this is from Hinzelmann. The boombox is from Hinzelmann. The batteries are from Hinzelmann. She owns all of the buildings in town. Clearly, by the end, she is running things as she has been doing the entire time. So lots of stuff going on with Hinzelmann. And I do think that's the detail that you kind of need to hang on to with the scene and why that's there to begin with.
Yeah, I think what she's doing is similar to how she's killing cars. She's putting people out in the ice and then they fall through and die. I mean, that, I don't know what her deal is, but that's got to be it.
Interesting. Whatever her, she maintains control of the town. They're about to slip into sort of mob mentality about the missing girl.
Well, because they all eat pasties and that's how they're under control.
Yeah. There's something in the food. Soylent Green is people. Friendly pasties are also people. I think she's clearly orchestrating everything in the same way that Mr. Wednesday's orchestrating so much of the stuff going on in his side of the story. And I do find it interesting that Wednesday was orchestrating Shadow's life for every other episode up until he got to Lakeside, and now he's suddenly hands off. But still, Shadow's moving forward, doing things. I think Hinzelmann has taken over for Wednesday in the manipulation game.
Interesting.
I did like that moment of Moonshadow standing in the shadow of the moon there and enjoying the lovely light show. I thought that was very mystical and fun.
That was nice. This was a big episode for me, seeing characters that I wrote down, like, it's Derek. Who's Derek? Because I don't. Hey, was Derek? Marguerite's son? Was that the deal at the end there?
Still in the undies? Yes, okay. I believe so. He runs out, jumps off of his porch roof like a baller. Yeah. Like, does it just drops one's full story. Yeah. Drops a bag with a bra in it. That Shadow pulls out, and then the weirdest transition of the whole series what happened there, where the bra holes grew in it and it became a bee. That was so weird to me.
When you're hooking up with a girl, you take your bra off, suddenly it's a letter B.
Alex,
and you're like, oh shit, I'm on Sesame Street.
I don't want to Mr. Wednesday you, but once the bra comes off, let the bra go. You don't need to hold on to it. If there's some sort of romance happening.
The bra's not the important part.
The bra's not the important part. Huh?
What if she needs it back?
Now, again, I think that's a good concern. Like, don't destroy it. Like, don't turn it into a beat. But again, I think gently set it aside and get back to whatever.
It's always weird when a girl's like, hey, Alex, what are you doing with my bra? And you're sitting there with scissors turning it into a beat.
Yeah, I'll destroy this little thing. This dirty little
word,
thing.
I need to spell a couple of other words.
You're spelling I love you in my bra, my underbra and underwear?
So there was that moment. There was also the Sam Blackrow moment, who I remembered later, but when he recognized her, I was like, it has been too many episodes. I do not remember this character at all. But it was nice seeing her again, and I did like the fact that they didn't go for the typical, I'm going to blow up the surprise in front of my sister thing. Their conversation at the end I thought was really nice. All of the stuff at Lakeside, all the stuff with Shadow Moon this episode I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. And we still don't know a lot of what the sort of overarching mystery here is, but it's becoming clear all the threads, every character is entangled with every other character more and more every episode. And it feels like this is all a game that I think we got to think that Wednesday is at the top of, and he's doing this for a purpose that only serves him. He's creating a war. If what we were saying earlier about he's actually in charge of the new gods, he's creating this fight for some reason. That is in service of him and him alone.
Well, so that's usually how things work. It'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. But I also am, because you guys were so hyped about Lakeside, I'm anxious about Lakeside, because I was like, all right, why do these guys care so much about, oh man, it's so great, they're in Lakeside. Lakeside's where all the shit goes down, and nothing has happened in Lakeside, and nobody's dealing with the car on the ice, and it's driving me fucking crazy.
Yeah, no one's dealing with it. You wait, Pete, I promise that's going to be a huge, huge part of the story.
It fucking better be.
Because when you live on a lake, you got to paint with fish.
That's a wrap. Track three.
I think track two and track three are very similar.
No going backwards. We make records. They're permanent.
I did
the,
think
one, the one other detail that I think people should hang on to, and Pete, maybe you want to hang on to it because it was on a car, but as Sam Blackrow was driving away, there was a little decal on her dashboard that said Lakeside Thunderbirds, which we've seen talk of a Thunderbird. We've kind of seen a shadow of a Thunderbird over the lake. It's all coming together.
Yes.
I hope so.
Let's talk about Demeter and Wednesday, because that was the bulk of the episode. I thought this was great. It's just you have a bunch of amazing actors all working together. That's what American Gods is, at the best of its abilities, doing this really emotional story about Tyr and Odin and Demeter. I really like the storyline across the board. I thought it really worked.
I really liked it. I also liked the mini relationship between the Pottery class and the kind of like assistant dude. I thought that was cool, too, of like kind of foreshadowing or showing a little bit of their young love, which we kind of found out about their origin story of love. But I really liked Demeter as far as like as a character. Sometimes what happens is like, oh, we have the main character, and even though he's a dick, she's still going to like go on his side and help him out, even though there's no way in real life somebody would do that. I was very happy with Demeter sticking to her choices, sticking to her guns, and being like, dude, you're still a piece of shit, and just because you have momentary niceness doesn't mean I'm gonna believe you at all. And I kind of agree. I would rather float away and turn into flower mist than to deal with Wednesday's bullshit again, you know?
Wow. I mean, I've had so many breakups where at the end of it, the girl just turns into flowers and dust and stuff.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. Same with me, except it was salmon mist and it was gross.
What's worst that scent you're wearing?
Nothing. I'll tell you later.
What's wrong with Alex? I don't know. Smell the air. Salmon mist. I think she broke up with him. I love the way that this season they're using the cold open stuff to actually tie into the episode. I think it's sort of showing again how everything's coming together. I also like that Wednesday is the unreliable narrator of this cold open. He sets himself up to be this like put upon hero who's really been through it. And we learned throughout the story and this shadow play, which was very well staged.
Man.
What stagecraft? What dramaturgy? Like, who is this guy? He's got everything. He's the god of – he's the all-father, but he's also the like theater major.
Yeah, it was impressive. Right? The lighting, the kind of metalwork being the thunder was great. Yeah, it was really impressive.
But I do think – I think at the end of this, Demeter does – Tyr in this scene where Tyr shows up at the play, which is great. And then he bails because he's got to get back to that tooth shit.
Oh, he loves teeth, man. He can't be away from his teeth for too long.
I'm the same way with teeth. Come on, yep. Then we have this love triangle scene in the garden area where I think it's clear Demeter does love Mr. Wednesday above Tyr and knows that they're sort of inevitable. And that's why when they're talking later in the scene and he's like, yep, we're going to go beat the new gods. And she's like, oh, same old shit.
Yeah,
so she's like, she dusts. She dusts and burns her way out of the situation.
I love that moment. I love that moment of Wednesday clearly caring about her, her caring about him, and then him, as usual, taking it one step too far. And she realizes, like you said, things are never going to change. I thought that was really good. I'm surprised you didn't bring up Hamlet, Justin.
Mm.
Very disappointed. The play is the thing in which I'll catch the conscience of the king, which the episode takes its title from.
I will say, Alex, I did see you googling that.
I did see you googling it one minute ago,
so don't rub it too hard into my face.
Yeah.
Do you know why I googled it? Because I thought the quote was, the play is the thing which will catch the conscience of the king, but it's actually I'll catch the conscience of the king. So I wanted to double check before I said it on a podcast. Thanks for blowing up my spot.
Well, you blew up my spot pretty hard, and that's the thing with blown up spots is it's contagious, motherfucker.
That's how you end up with a bunch of clouds of salmon mist everywhere in town. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's right.
There's
a salmon mist rolling through town.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't hitting record on that one.
Well, I'll try to do it again.
No time.
No, but I really did like how sad Wednesday was at the window. That moment of like, oh, hey, where is she? Oh, she's outside. And you could just like feel the tension of that. And then when we kind of see her, it's like, oh, it doesn't look like she's coming back. And she all portrayed that very much in her face and how things. I was really impressed with that moment. Also really impressed with, like, Wednesday's reaction with that, as far as, like, sure, he wanted something from her. Yes, he has goals. But if, like, all the way through, he was still trying to be like, but the love is real. I made mistakes. I'm very sorry. You know, and that's what was nice about it. It wasn't, yes, he has the agenda of trying to save the old gods, but he feels like he has to do that anyway. And so, like, he wanted her along for the fight. But, yeah, it was just tough because I felt like the actors, like Zalbin was saying, really did an amazing job in that instance.
Yeah, it was fun. He was doing a victory lap around the retirement home, just being like, hey, keep it fresh. Oh, stay cool, dude. You're going to work it out. And then shit blows up right in front of his face. It was very fun.
Good stuff. Before we wrap up here, I feel like we covered a lot of the episode, but any other moments either of you wanted to call out? Anything from the old notes?
The notes. No, I mean, I think Yes, go ahead. Yeah, Pete, is there an answering machine that really drew your attention at one point?
Well, no, but it's funny you said I thought it was hilarious that Wednesday was rocking Ugg boots in the kind of old folks home. I thought that was a fun, like, I'm going crazy type of moment thing. But also the way he talked about the art of love was very interesting. Like, he is a scam artist, but he also kind of believes in it. So it was, I love the duality of that. And like the whole those worthy of love, and like kind of giving this kid a little bit of a pep talk and getting him on the right track. He is horrible, but he does have moments of goodness.
What is love but the greatest scam of all? I'm a sociopath.
I did like the line, I don't need drugs, I am drugs.
Yeah, that was a great line.
Good little moment. Before we wrap up then, who is worthy of your worship this episode? Justin, why don't we start with you?
I mean, I want to give it up for Laura Moon in the scene where she sees Shadow again. Shadow is doing the biggest, like, sitcom goof around moment, like very Friends, mid-series Friends shit, where two girls are there and he's like, and she's just like, all right, dude, whatever. I got my own business. I'll see you later. I really like the way she's positioned right in the season, and I'm excited to. She feels like the only one who's truly, like, has free play on the board. Everyone else feels like they're already in their positions, and she's the only one who has true autonomy. Great.
Pete, what you're a you? Fucking piece of shit for saying that.
Well, thank you for horrible. The assault of emoji reaction while I was trying
disagree.
To talk.
Disagree. Thumbs way down, bro.
Oh, my God. Please stop using emojis on Skype, Pete. Who's worthy of your worship? Who are you worshiping this episode?
Danny motherfucking Trejo is worthy. I never knew how glorious it was going to be until he showed up, and it all became a better show just by his presence.
Great. I am going to give it up for Shadow Moon this episode. As mentioned, I thought he was so much fun. Ricky Whittle was clearly having a great time this episode. Even if he was in a lot of sitcom plots, I think that's exactly where he should be. He is thriving there. And I'm having a great time watching it. I am also having a great time if you support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub.
Wait. Do you guys think if you hire him, like, you get free tacos? Like, is that part of the deal? Like, I don't. Why aren't more people hiring Danny Trejo? Like, you could get tacos and Danny Trejo.
That's a great question. That giant taco who runs the company is a hard negotiator.
Hard.
Exactly.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We'll chat with you about American Gods. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. At A Godcast on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep worshiping. Gotta find a better sign-off.
No, it's good. I think it's really good. What if it was more like a song? Just keep worshiping.
Oh, we got it.